Acharya, Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Shri Kahol, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Shri Gadadhar, Shri Vasa Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radhasama Sundar, Gopa Gopiyan, Shana Kun, Raja Kun, Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mathura Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Shri Bhakti Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samavena Bhaktavinoda Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, which is entitled Narada's Instruction on Srimad Bhagavatam. We're talking on text number 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naistuki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Hare Krishna. So text 17. Tvatva svadharmam charanam bhujam hare. Tvatva svadharmam charanam bhujam hare. Vajan apakvota patet tato yadi. Vajan apakvota patet tato yadi. Yatra vabhadram adbhut amusyakim.
Yatra vabhadram adbhut amusyakim.
Kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata.
Kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata.
Tvatva svadharmam charanam bhujam hare.
Tvatva svadharmam charanam bhujam hare.
Vajan apakvota patet tato yadi.
Vajan apakvota patet tato yadi.
Yatra papa vabhadram abhut amusyakim.
Yatra vabhadram abhut amusyakim.
Kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata.
Kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata.
Tvatva svadharmam. Let's, everybody can say this together. Tvatva
svadharmam charanam bhujam hare.
Vajan apakvota patet yato yadi. Yatra
vabhadram abhodamushyakim.
Kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata. Very good, you did very good, thank you. Word for word, tvaktva, having forsaken, svadharmam, one's own occupational engagement, charana ambujam, the lotus feet, hare, of hari, the Lord, bhajan, in the course of devotional service, apakva, immature, ata, for the matter of, patet, falls down, tata, from that place, yadi, if, yatra, whereupon, kva, what sort of, va, or, used sarcastically. I've never seen that in Prabhupada's word for word. But anyway, used sarcastically. Abhadram, unfavorable. Adbhut shall happen. Amusya of him. Kim nothing. Kva va arta, what interest? Apta obtain. Abhajatam of the non-devotee. Svadharmata, being engaged in occupational service. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The verse is, one who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage. Yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Okay, we'll say this together. One who has forsaken his material occupations. Do you have a different there? Okay. We'll do it again. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord
may sometimes fall down while in an immature state. Yet,
there is no danger
of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee fully engaged in occupational duty does not gain anything.
Hare Krishna. So this purport, I'm going to read a couple of sentences and then comment as we go along. Okay, I'm not going to read the whole purport through right now. I am going to read the whole purport, but not all at once. Okay. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As far as the duties of mankind are concerned, there are innumerable duties. And I just want to say, Oma gina timiran dasya janam jana salakaya chatsu umilitam jena taslayam shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master very kindly forced open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I'm eternally indebted to his lotus feet and beg for service life after life. Purport again. As far as the duties of mankind are concerned, there are innumerable duties. Every man is duty-bound not only to his parents, family members, society, country, humanity, other living beings, the demigods, etc., but also to the great philosophers, poets, scientists, etc. So even those first two sentences, we see a concept that in the Western world, at least, being brought up in the Western world, we're not even aware of that concept of being duty-bound. We might feel some slight and to varying degrees of attachment and duty to our parents. But even that, with the way the situation in Kali Yuga is, the family structure, the tightness of the family structure is so much disintegrated and disintegrated even further. What to speak of that we could say the average person, do they feel duty bound? There's a blood relationship between family members, yeah. And they say, as the saying goes, blood is thicker than water. So the relationship with the family, it's stronger than a friendly relationship or a relationship with your neighbor, but still so easily broken in this age of Kali. And society, just like how many times has Mother Mukya and other people have said what our duty is to society right now during a pandemic, you know, stay away, this, that, so many restrictions. And so many of us in thinking independently think, oh, that's for other people, not for us. I'm not infected or whatever. But we have not a very strong sense of obligation to any of these things the Prabhupada has mentioned here. Country. When there's a war in the country, there's always a group of people who protest the war, and usually the people who are about to be drafted to go into the war, they're feeling very constrained by it and restrained and resentful that they have to go and fight, and that's because usually it's not a religious war anyway. But, you know, there's not such a strong sense of my point is that there's not such a strong sense of duty to any of those things. But in the past, in the Vedic age, and culture was more bound on religious principles, there was that sense that I'm not an independent person here. I'm dependent on the Lord's mercy and on his arrangement for society in general. And therefore, they were much more willing and understanding of the need to render service to these people, to these groups, humanity, other living beings, the demigods, etc., the philosophers, the poets, the scientists, etc. Okay. So continuing on in the purport, it is enjoined in the scriptures that one can relinquish all such duties and surrender unto the service of the Lord. So when Srila Prabhupada came to the West and started his preaching in New York and in San Francisco and Los Angeles and those areas, and was attracting the hippie generation, mostly, not only, but mostly, it was not a very concerning thing for those people at that time to relinquish duties, relinquish family ties, relinquish their job, relinquish everything. And that's how it was initially. Those who initially were attracted to Srila Prabhupada's movement, they initially gave up everything. All of their, you know, family ties, all of their job, any money that they had, everything was surrendered to Krishna, to Prabhupada and his movement. And they joined the temple and had a whole completely new lifestyle. So over the times, that system of giving up everything, or that conception, we'll call it, not necessarily a system, but that conception of giving up everything and changing your life 100% completely drastically, that has evolved into a different type of surrender. But the point that Srila Prabhupada's making is that that one can do that. One can relinquish these heavy responsibilities that one has if one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God. That's bona fide. You see, you hear, there's many instances in scriptures that of kings, many kings who didn't have any progeny, they were very concerned that they weren't fulfilling their duty to their family by producing a son who would continue the dynasty. Very famous and in this time quite applicable was King Dasarath. King Dasarath, although he had been married three times for the sake of getting progeny, he hadn't produced any heir to the throne, and therefore he was anxiety, even though every other aspect of his life and all of the other duties were fulfilled. He was feeling like that. Even Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda, not that they wanted progeny though. Anyway, whatever, sorry, forget that example. Sorry. But King Dasarath, and he got the benediction to have the four sons, and Lord Ram made his appearance, which he is about to do very soon. And what to speak of Chitraketu, he really went to quite the extreme to produce his son, and yet it wasn't. Anyway, but why was he doing that? Because of the obligation he felt to the family and to the country that he was in. Anyway, again, my point is, we hardly, in this age, hardly feel that great sense of duty. But the scriptures say, if one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God, it's all his duties. And that's the point of this verse that Narada Muni's making in his instructions to Vyasadeva. So Prabhupada continues, if one does so and becomes successful in the discharge of his devotional service to the Lord, it is well and good. But it so happens that sometimes that one surrenders himself unto the service of the Lord by some temporary sentiment, and in the long run, due to so many other reasons, he falls down from the path of service by undesirable association. So the point that Srila Prabhupada's making, and he's going to continue to make very strongly in this verse, is that whatever little attempt one makes in devotional service, that is all successful. So this similar question and this similar circumstance was asked by Arjuna to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. It's in the sixth chapter, starting with text 37. Arjuna says, sixth chapter 37, Arjuna says, O Krishna, what's the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly mindedness and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism. So we can see here this circumstance of Arjuna. There he was, Krishna had just explained this process of dhyana yoga to him, how one should sit with his head erect and this and that and meditate like this and meditate on the tip of the nose with your eyes half closed. And Arjuna said, that's way too hard. I can't do that. But Krishna's stressing that these things are important. So he's asking, well, if you give up your duty, and he had a very heavy responsibility at the time, facing the opponents at Kurukshetra, if you give up your duty and take to the process of devotional service or transcendental life, and you're not successful, you've failed in your duty, and you failed in your spiritual attempts. So what good is that? So that the dialogue that continues after this verse, Arjuna is asking, doesn't he just fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? And he's asking Krishna to dispel his doubt. So Krishna then says in text 40, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction, either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So sometimes, I'll continue on with the verses and then I'll pick it up. So 41, he talks about someone who's made a little endeavor in devotional service, what are they going to get? The unsuccessful yogi, if he's been practicing for a short amount of time, that is, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entity, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. And then for someone who's been on the path of devotional service for a long time and still isn't 100% complete, that type of personality, they take birth, Krishna explains in the next verse, in a family of transcendentalists. And that opportunity is a rare opportunity. But they take their birth, and they're naturally, he explains, 43. On taking such a birth, he revives his divine consciousness of his previous life and again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. And explaining how that happens, he said, by virtue of the divine consciousness, or by virtue of whatever progress a person's made in their previous life, they are automatically attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands above the ritualistic principles of devotion. It's just a very, really nice series of verses to encourage us. Sometimes we have to realize that the goal of Krishna consciousness, developing pure love of God, highest prema that's available, pure love of God in the highest degree, that is a very lofty goal, free from all attraction to the material world, free from all desire for material sense gratification, free from any anger.
How that happens, he said, by virtue of the divine consciousness,
it's very, very, a very high goal. And that goal sometimes, especially after one is taken to the process with whatever degree of sincerity that they have, they're taken to the process and they realize that they barely can even chant one Hare Krishna mantra thinking of Krishna. What to speak of one Hare Krishna mantra thinking of Krishna with love after 45 years of trying. So sometimes it might seem like a reason to be discouraged. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's why I really appreciate these verses that give us all encouragement on the path. Whatever little progress that we've made in devotional service, that's to our eternal benefit. Now, I've heard this example a bazillion times. If you make 5% progress, then your next life you start off at 6%. If you make 10%, if you make 20%, if you make 0.5%, you start off at 0.6%. That is the special, that is the special benefit, the special mercy of engaging in a transcendental process. It's not dependent on material situations. Any endeavor that we make in the material world, if it's not executed to its completion, then one has to start at zero again. So, excuse me. So these verses that encourage us to take the devotional service to whatever degree we can, we should relish them, take them to our heart and think, how can I, realistically looking at myself and where I'm at, how can I make more progress? Somebody might say, oh, regulated life is really hard for me, getting up early regularly is really hard for me. Whatever position you're in, that's, in one sense, it's okay. But strive to come to one more little notch higher. Strive. I've given it in the past, and I like this example that Vaisheshika Prabhu gives. It's like wedge it in. Whatever little bit extra you can do, whatever little bit that will help you in your spiritual life, wedge it in. Put it in, force it in, little bit every day, so that somehow or other we're making progress. The material energy, especially now we can see that how the material energy is really affecting us. I know for myself how I'm experiencing this, these pandemic times. I've personally found for myself, at least for the last few days it's been working, that if I recite my prayers, and if I recite the slokas, and if I recite this and that, if I recite it out loud, somehow or other, it just helps me steady my mind and it helps me fix my mind on what I'm doing. If I'm just reading, my mind's wandering, thinking of what I should have said to somebody or what I should do or what I'm going to do after I stop reading. But when I speak it out loud, that really helps me. It's just one little tip that helped me. But the point, back to the point that's in the purport, that even if whatever attempt that we've made, even we might fall away, that progress that we've made will ultimately bring us back to the path of devotional service, and one will achieve ultimate success, which I know Vegavati is smiling right now in her home because she knows I'm about to say. My favorite verse, my favorite line from Srila Prabhupada's, all of Prabhupada's books, is in Nectar of Instruction, in the third verse, in the purport, Prabhupada says that the process of bhakti is so pure and potent that once having begun, one is dragged to ultimate success. So that's just so encouraging. It's just so encouraging. Yes, we have a long journey in front of us. Yes. Yes, there might be so many obstacles on the path. And what are those obstacles? Those obstacles are my own obstacles. My own obstacles that from my previous deeds, I'm experiencing the result of those reactions. And therefore, there's an obstacle on my path in devotional service. There might be so many obstacles that I've made because of my own past activities, that I'm suffering this or that or whatever. But even so, even they might be there, progress will be had. And we can make further progress. So it's just so encouraging. And there's so many stories in the Bhagavatam that allude to this thing. And Prabhupada's going to talk about that. Here, back to the purport. There are so many instances of this in the histories. And what is he talking about? So many instances of that somebody who, I'm going to the sentence in front, but it so happens sometimes that one surrenders himself unto the service of the Lord by some temporary sentiment, and in the long run, due to so many other reasons, falls down from the path of devotional service by undesirable association. There are so many instances of this in the history. Bharat Maharaj was obliged to take his birth as a stag due to his intimate attachment to his stag. He thought of this stag when he died. As such, in the next birth, he became a stag, although he did not forget the incident of his previous birth. Similarly, Chitraketu also fell down due to his offenses at the feet of Shiva. But in spite of this, the stress is given here to surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Lord, even if there is a chance of falling down. Because even though one falls down from the prescribed duties of devotional service, he will never forget the lotus feet of the Lord. So just as I was remembering this, I was remembering because Lord Ramachandra's appearance day is coming up soon. I was remembering in the story of Lord Ram. Lord Ram says something to the effect of, even if one just chants my name once, even if one just once says my name, even if one just once says, I am yours, then... Sorry, it took me a while to get to
this.
Yeah, very famous. Even if one just once says that I am yours, then Lord Ramachandra says that I am completely obliged to him, and I will protect him always. Would you like to say it more concise? Because some of them are forgetting exactly that. Is that good enough? Lord Ram's taking a vow.
Yes. That I will protect you, and Prabhupada can say, encourage us.
Encourage?
From that day. When somebody sincerely, seriously surrender once at least, say, my Lord, from today I am yours.
And can you tell us the Sanskrit for I am yours, Tavasmi?
Tavevasmi.
Tavevasmi.
Najasa.
So if one, just one says, I am yours, we can say, I am yours, Krishna.
Yeah.
I'm yours, Krishna, please accept me. Then the Lord is obliged to protect us, keep us in fear, keep us encouraged. He's obliged, he'll never forget us. Then in Sri Shapanishad, and I looked up the purport, and I forgot which number it is. I think it's the 10th verse purport, but I could be wrong. But anyway, in Sri Shapanishad for sure, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, you know, he talks about, we know the goal of life is to remember Krishna at the time of death. The devotees understand that that's our highest goal. And Krishna says, even if there's some circumstance where one isn't able to remember Krishna at the time of death, Srila Prabhupada says, then Krishna will force himself in your mind to remember him at the time of death. Yeah. That's so, there's so much
encouragement.
Okay, thank you. Okay, here's the translation to that statement I was talking about Lord Ramachandra. And Lord Ramachandra says, it's my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, My dear Lord, from this day I am yours. Tasmai, I think that's good. Yours, awesome. Tava asmi, yeah. Tava asmi. And praise to me for courage. I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Thank you very kindly for that. So that feeling of safe, don't even have a doubt what that feeling of safe means. Safe means protected from the cycle of repeated birth and death. That's what safe means. Safe doesn't mean we won't be affected by this, we won't be affected by that. No, we will be affected, but even though we can see, even though we're affected by this restrictions, we're not affected in the same way because of what the transcendental knowledge that Srila Prabhupada very kindly strived, worked, endeavored so arduously and to present to us. Okay, so that's the focus on the encouraging statement. Here's your homework for today. Look up some encouraging statement, or if you have your favorite encouraging story from the Bhagavatam or Krishna book, or an instruction of Srila Prabhupada, a morning walk or whatever, look it up, or tell somebody else through the internet. Haha. Okay. Continuing on. Similarly, did I read that? Okay, I'm going to do it. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I saw. Once engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, one will continue the service in all circumstances. In Bhagavad Gita, this is what I was reading earlier. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, even a small quantity of devotional service can save one from the most dangerous position. There are many such instances of such examples in history. Ajamil is one of them. Ajamil in his early life was a devotee, but in his youth he fell down. Still, he was saved by the Lord in the end. So that's the end of Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. I'm going to read the verse again. One who has forsaken his material occupation to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature state. Yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duty, does not gain anything. So another thought that just went through my mind when I was reading this part, there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. The danger that we have, the unfortunate danger that we have, that I'm personally experiencing right now, is I'm living with my biggest enemy. My biggest enemy happens to be stuck on top of my shoulders, my head, and my mind. And the mind is always so expert in discouraging one. Oh, you're no good. Oh, you'll never do it. Oh, you can't chant nicely. So why chant at all? Oh, you can't concentrate. Oh, this, oh, that. But that's our enemy. Srila Prabhupada, Narada Muni, the scriptures are telling us we don't have any danger and we're going to ultimately be successful because we've endeavored. We've started on the path. So let's hear a big Hari Bol. Hari Bol to all of you who have started on the path. And Hari Bol to your very soon successfully accomplishing the goal of your life, the ultimate pure goal of your life, to develop pure love for Krishna. It will be soon. It seems like it's a long time. Yeah, that's the illusion. It seems like a long time. But relatively speaking, it's a very short time. That's the story of Mukunda. Mukunda, who was in Chaitanya Leela?
Yes.
Is it Mukunda? Yeah, Mukunda, who, when Lord Chaitanya, it was demonstrating his Aishwarya Bhav, his mood of opulence, and he sat on the throne in Srivasangam, he sat on the altar and asked all the devotees to come forward and pray for a benediction, he was granting benedictions to everyone. Mukunda wasn't coming forward. Srivas approached Lord Chaitanya and said, Mukunda won't come forward unless you call him. Lord Chaitanya said, that Mukunda. I forget the Bengali term used, but that he's like a duplicitous guy. He comes to the programs of Bhakti Sangha and says, oh, Bhakti's wonderful, Bhakti's this, Bhakti's great. And then he goes out, and where does he go? To other groups, impersonalist groups, and he praises the process of dhyan and this and that. He's just chorakor?
Yeah,
he's just a pretender, I think. That's the word. Anyway, and tell him then somewhere or other, there's some exchange. Mukunda says, tell him he can't come here. They told Mukunda, and he said, oh, please ask him, when can I have his association again? And so they go back and they ask Lord Chaitanya, tell him for 10 million lives. In 10 million lives, he will certainly get my association again, but not for 10 million lives. So they're thinking, the devotees are thinking, how? What's going to happen to him when we tell him this? So they go and they tell Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya said, you for certainly are not going to get his association for 10 million lives. Now that's a pretty devastating statement, but what did Mukunda hear? He heard the word certainly. For sure, you're going to get it in 10 million lives. And Mukunda focused on that as opposed to the time of the banishment. And he said, 10 million lives, Hari Bol, Lord Chaitanya will be merciful to me in 10 million lives, Hari Bol. And the devotees were so astonished. They said, what? And he said, for the amount of time that I've already been in this material world, 10 million lives is nothing. And Lord Chaitanya promised that I'm going to get his association in 10 million lives. So therefore, I'm going to get it, and that's ecstatic. We'll go back to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya says, so? Did you tell him? What was his reaction? He said, they said, his reaction was totally amazing. Yes, we told him. And you know what? He jumped up and started to say, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And Lord Chaitanya said, very good. Let him come. And they said, wait a minute. First you said he can't come for 10 million lives. And now you're saying he can come right away. What's going on? And he said, but the understanding is that Lord Chaitanya, he's the time factor. He's Kalosmi, he's the time factor. He can stretch the time as he likes. He can condense the time as he likes. He's the controller, not us. So he said he explained to the devotees, yes, he has passed his punishment of 10 million lives, all condensed into those few seconds. So tell him he can come here. Sometimes, this is just another point, sometimes people think, oh, like we read from the sixth chapter, I don't know exactly which verse, but after the 37th verse, between the 37th and the 42nd verse of the sixth chapter, it talks about the unsuccessful yogi after passing millions of years on the heavenly planet comes down. And then they think, oh, well then you'll be coming down at the, and it won't be Kali Yuga anymore, or the Kali Yuga, no, excuse me, will be Kali Yuga, will be progressed, it won't be the 10,000 years of Lord Chaitanya's yuga, golden time. But actually, my understanding, I'll couch it in that, my understanding is, Lord Krishna, he can stretch the time and he can condense the time. And Lord Brahma came and stole the calf. He stole him for a second. But on earth it was a year. So, you know, time, Krishna can do anything. That's the point. And engage in devotional service to your best ability as much as you can. Okay, Jai Srila Prabhupada. Now what? Are there questions coming in or no?
Yeah, we got a couple of questions. Also, you can give the number. 352221.
The number to call in, or no, to text in your question is 352-221-0041. You can text in your question to that. 352-22-something. 22 what? 221-0041.
Wow, they could hear somebody talking in background. Two people text.
Oh, yeah. Because the microphone is closer to where they were talking. Yeah, they moved. It was an important conversation. It was outside.
There's one question asked.
What are the temporary sentiments that you have? Can you give some example?
What are the temporary, what did it say again? What are the
temporary sentiments that Prabhupada put in the
Oh, the temporary sentiments? The question is, what are the temporary sentiments that one might have, and can you give some example? I'm just going to go back to the part in the purpose. Okay, here's the sentence that that person is referring to. In the purpose. But it so happens sometimes that one surrenders himself unto the service of the Lord by some temporary sentiment, and in the long run, due to so many other reasons, he falls down. So the temporary sentiment can be, I want to be a devotee. But it because of the modes of nature, one's determination wanes, you know. Sometimes it feels strong. Yeah, I want to be a devotee. I want to join. This is what I want to do. And then when you do that, then what does your mind say? Yeah, but, what about, you know, and so for some time you're eating halva and everything's really nice and you're thinking, yeah, this is great. And then this is just a random example, okay? And then let's say somebody says to you, Prabhu, you're not supposed to put your bee bag on the floor. And then later on in the day someone says to you, Prabhu, you know, you're not saying that mantra properly. And then someone else says to you later on, Prabhu, you know, you're not sweeping the floor nicely. You should do it like this. And then you think, the mind might be saying, I'm just hearing all these negative things. I don't want to be here. Let me go. So although they temporarily thought they wanted to be a devotee, then due to circumstances, and we've all, some of us have all experienced in various degrees of things like that scenario, they get discouraged, and the mind says, but if you go back to your house, you can be a devotee there, and you won't have anyone getting on your case all the time. And therefore, they do. And for some time, they might maintain some principles, and then gradually, perhaps, fall away. So the temporary sentiments means that your desire isn't, you can't maintain the force of your desire, the strength of your desire. That's my understanding.
Can you please, this is from Ashley, can you please tell where I can read the verse about Lord Ram giving protection again? Very nice class, thank you.
The verse of Lord Ram giving protection is, where did you get that? Oh, it's quoted in Madhulila, right? It's quoted in Chaitanya
Charitamrita.
It's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, just the verse there. Madhulila 22.34. 34. Madhya 22.34. That's the quote of that verse of Lord Ram that's quoted in the Madhya Lila. Where it is exactly in Ramayana, I don't know. You'll have to listen to the whole Ramayana. Amala Bhakti has a really nice Ramayana audio you can be listening to during the day while you're doing other things. Okay.
Okay. One more question.
It seems like the difficulty is convincing ourselves that the subtle mind carries over life after life. One who is not convinced about these things, whatever progress I have made in this lifetime will be finished. How can I possibly come up with the same consciousness again in a new lifetime? Even now, my mind flits from one thing to another. In other words, there is not the faith that the Lord will help you recover your consciousness, just as he did when he replaced the coward boys and calves that Lord Brahma stole. Doesn't have a name.
Okay, so understanding that I'm picking up a little misunderstanding, and you can correct me further in that question. The fact, it's not your mind. Your mind isn't the same. It's the desires. You have this, we have desires in our heart, and those material desires force us to take birth again. And then Super Soul reminds us, you had that desire. You had that desire to become a this or a that or be famous or whatever. And therefore, or to enjoy. You have that desire to still enjoy in the material world, and the Super Soul reminds us to continue on with that, and therefore we go. Now we have impressions from one life to another, like somebody perhaps might be an angry person and always react in anger. So in their next life, they also have that anger. But what that, the anger is that they're, the basis of the anger, go behind the anger. The anger is the manifestation of a frustrated material desire. That somebody wants to enjoy in a certain way and they're not, and they're feeling frustrated in all their attempts to enjoy, and therefore it's manifested in anger. They want a certain thing to be a certain, they want to be a controller. They want people to react in a certain way. They didn't react in a friendly way or in a loving way, and therefore I'm exhibiting anger because you didn't do it the way I wanted. It's beyond the specifics of it is the subtle desire or the misconception that I am the enjoyer, I am powerful, I am this, and this is my friend and this is my enemy. That's the misconception. And just another point about the mind, I've recently started to say the Buddha Suti prayers every day. I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Kshatriya. Okay. But then the next, not that that's not important, but the next couple of paragraphs, I'm, by nature, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, but by misfortune, I've been inimical towards Krishna since when? Time immemorial.
But now I have the good fortune to understand by the mercy of my spiritual master that I'm completely separate from my gross body. But it's not only my gross body, it's my gross and subtle body. This mind that's telling us this and that, and this, that's not us. That's the materially contaminated mind. We're somebody else. We're blissful, pure spirit souls that are totally absorbed in serving Krishna all the time in love. That's who we really are. It's just a question of digging down deep enough to have that come out. Is that all for now?
No, we got three more.
Oh.
Yeah, it's working. No, it worked.
Okay.
This is from Mother Mahendrani. Thank you for your very encouraging class. One mundane statement made by a positivity person was helpful to me in the struggle to keep sadhana practice as strong as possible amid life's demands. The statement is, quotation, anything worth doing is worth doing imperfectly. This is not encouragement to be slack, but encouragement not to give up, to stop trying.
Good point. Anything that's worth doing is worth doing imperfectly, because it's worth doing. And therefore, and then taking that and applying it to the process of bhakti yoga, if we had to do it perfectly right from day one, where would we be? No, the fact that we can make our attempt repeatedly, continuously, over and over again, that's striving for perfection, that's encouraging. Thank you, Mahendrani, for that.
Next one is from Mother Vishnu Priya. Very encouraging class. I hear these examples and know the generosity and kindness of the Lord and Srila Prabhupada. But still, I lose hope so easily.
Yeah,
is this my karmic baggage from
you just wait
so many lifetimes in this world?
Could you just read that again, that one sentence? Oh. A little bit? Sorry.
This example, know the generosity and kindness of the Lord and Srila Prabhupada. But still, I lose hope so easily. Is this my karmic baggage from so many lifetimes in this material world?
Yes. But, it's our baggage. That's how there was one word I didn't understand. Is this my what baggage? What's the word she used before that? Is this my what baggage? Okay.
Karmic.
Karmic. Okay, thank you. All right, good. Yes. So this is yours and my karmic baggage, that we have a mind that discourages us. Yes, yes, yes. Is it real? It's real in the sense of, yes, it discourages us, but it's not, we don't have to accept it in that sense. Maybe I'm searching for the right words. I'm going to keep talking until it comes. But it's not real. It's not permanent. It's not going to keep us down. It's going to try to keep us down. But in the end, we have to understand the modes, like all the different pieces of the philosophy, they somehow or other, they're like puzzle pieces and they fit together at different times. Sometimes we remember some of them, sometimes we forget some of them. So if you remember how when we talk about the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and how one is never, they're never steady, prominent. You know, sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, sometimes. But then it's fighting for predominance, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. And mostly they're all mixed up in a mumbo jumbo, you know. So when these negative or discouraging thoughts come, you're no good, it's too hard, I can't try, or whatever, however it's packaged for the individual person, I give up. Then perhaps that's when you really have to like try to realize, oh, that's my mind. You know, you don't have to get into, oh, I'm so bad that I thought that, oh, and then meditate more and more on the negativity. That's the mind. I'm not my mind. And I'm going to chant Hare Krishna. Even if I'm chanting Hare Krishna and my mind does its usual running all over the universe thing, still at this one moment when I'm remembering Krishna right now, Krishna, please accept this one moment of sincere prayer. Krishna, I'm yours. And I just happen to have this material mind that's bringing me all down to hell and back.
But I'm yours, and sooner or later, I'm going to get there. One thing, personally, that I've been doing, is, so not all the time, because I don't remember all the time, but when I do have a remembrance of Krishna, I think, Krishna, thank you for that. And can you please give me another one? Can you please give me another opportunity to remember you? And sometimes when I offer my obeisances, I think, I'm not, this person that's falling down before you is not who I am. I'm the pure spirit soul. And that pure spirit soul, that pure ecstatic personality, that pure person who is totally in love with you, is offering obeisances to you. And if I could just catch up to that, that would be really nice.
That's
nice. Okay.
This is Akhilananda from Ohio.
Ah, Hare Krishna.
So if you say, I am yours, can that also be for Krishna Bhaktas?
Yes, yes, yes. You mean for Lord Ram? You're thinking that we're saying to Lord Ram? Yeah, this is for Krishna Bhaktas. Krishna, I'm yours. It works. Lord Brahma says, third canto in the Bhagavatam, that the Lord reveals himself through the ears in the heart of the devotee. No, the Lord reveals himself in the heart of the devotee who, how do you say it? Enters the ears. And that's how the Lord reveals himself to the devotee, to the Lord that they've been meditating on. The Lord who they hear the glories of through their ears is revealed in their hearts to them. So we concentrate as Krishna Bhaktas, we concentrate on the two-armed form of the Supreme Lord, and that form of the Lord is revealed to us in the heart. Like, that's from Lord Brahma, third canto, somewhere.
The first question, devotee, his name is Madhava from Cleveland. He said, I appreciate your answer very much. I have to accept my lack of advancement and misconception.
Oh, that was the first one. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anyway.
One more. This is from Norman. Okay, I have a question. Which part of everyday duty described as taking place in the glorious past is the most glorious?
You need to read it one more time. Please.
Okay, I have a question.
That I got.
Which part of everyday duty describes as taking place in the glorious past is the most glorious?
Which part of everyday duty? Sorry.
Everyday duty described as taking place in the glorious past is the most glorious.
Thank you for that statement, question, but I don't totally understand your point. Which part of everyday duty taking place in the past? It's a little unclear to me. So either you can try to clarify it a little more, or Pran Govinda can answer it later on in the day. Either one.
Okay, let's see. Oh, one more. The drag one to bhakti from nectar devotion.
Nectar of instruction.
Nectar of instruction.
Yeah, that is in the nectar of instruction. It's in the purport of the third verse, towards the end. Okay, does that clarify? Yeah, nectar of instruction, third verse, purport, near the end. But that means you have to read the whole thing. Okay. All right, are we...
Looks like...
Okay, thank you very much for your participation. Keep on struggling to remember Krishna. Keep on chanting. Keep on glorifying the Lord. Keep on, and let's try. That's a really good notice. I've heard that notice that Mother Mukhi gave earlier about 5 o'clock to 5:15. We all chant, and we'll have, in whatever time zone we're in, at 5 o'clock in the evening, if we're chanting, then that means that the holy name will be going around the world forever. So let's try to participate. That's what we can do. What can we do? We can just do little things. Let's do them. Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Prabhupada.
That devotee, I think it's hiding still.
Oh, so we have a little.
Here.
Okay. All right. So we have a little clarification on that last point.
He's typing, you know.
Oh, he's typing it. Okay. It's yes. All he said is yes. Oh, you said yes? Okay, wait. Okay. Here it is, a little thing. Okay. All right. So he says, for example, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of curious example like Judd Bart pastime. He was born in a Brahminical family, yet his brothers sold him into slavery. Yeah. He's still typing some more.
That's good. They're paying attention.
Yeah. His brothers, hold on a second there. Let's think of that. His brother, okay, of course Krishna set things right in the end. Okay, but did his brothers really sell him into slavery? No. They had him guard the field at night, and when he was guarding the field at night, the robbers, you can take, I think he's finished. The robbers came and put him into slavery. So his brothers didn't sell him into slavery, but that's just a minor detail of the story. Sometimes curious things happen. There's so many, that's another point. There's so many curious things that happen in the pastimes of the Lord. The fact that the Matsya incarnation himself was 8 million miles long. How do you fit that in your mind? You know, accommodate 8 million miles. Hello, he doesn't fit on this Earth planet, that's for sure. You know, are so many things. What's the statement of Krishna book, when King Udrasena was described as having 3 trillion or 30 trillion, I can't remember the exact number, but an incredibly high number of personal bodyguards. You know, that it's not a, it, how to explain those things? Well, there's the acharyas, they go to length and they explain those things, but ultimately, Srila Jiva Goswami explains it by saying, if you can't accept the inconceivable potency of the Lord, that the Lord is inconceivable, meaning that we're never going to figure him out with our brain, no matter how intelligent we are, then you'll never understand, you'll never begin to even understand the glories of the Lord. He's inconceivable. He can do things way beyond what we can do.
I'm lost. No, that's good, actually. There are a lot of people.
Yeah, that's okay. Yes, go ahead.
It's the best in this also.
Okay.
Krishna always set things right in the end, or beginning, middle, or only in the end?
Krishna is all good, all times, for all people. Krishna says, I'm the beginning, I'm the middle, and I'm the end. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. Excuse me. If, for example, you were in the forest when King Indradumna was meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he was in trance, if you were nearby in a different little corner of the ashram, and Agastya Muni came in and spoke to King Indradumna, who did not respond to him because he was absorbed in trance, and he didn't know that the king was there. If you were there, so when he didn't get a response from King Indradumna, he cursed him to be a take birth as an animal, like a dull elephant, because he was acting so dull. What would your reaction be? I'll tell you what my reaction would be. My reaction would be is, that's not fair. He's meditating on the Lord. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't say anything offensive. That's not fair. And then I would think all sorts of offensive things about the person who cursed him. That's what I would do. So are we gonna measure, oh, is Krishna making it right there? Yes, Krishna's making it right there. Excuse me. Yeah. Krishna's making it right there. He's making it right for Agastya Muni to learn a lesson. He's making it right for King Indradumna right there, because King Indradumna had so many pious credits and pious activities that he had to work out all his karmic reactions, it would take many, many lifetimes. Same with Chitraketu. Krishna makes an arrangement sometimes directly and sometimes through his agents. You know, that, and that's what he's doing now. He's making an arrangement through his agents. You know, he doesn't have to do things personally. We need to develop our faith that everything is happening by Krishna's kindness. He's there. And the more that we look for Krishna's kindness in our life, the more we'll see it. So I didn't finish that example. So when Indradumna got cursed to become an elephant, and then he lived like an elephant, he was able to, when he was struggling with the crocodile, Krishna, he's the cause of remembrance and forgetfulness. Krishna allowed him to remember when it was getting close to his death, he allowed him to remember his prayers that he had learned. So Krishna's taking care of him. He's protecting him. By cursing him, he protected him. And when as an elephant, he protected him. So Krishna's always there. It's just a question of our vision. And as far as the rest of your question, it's still not clear to me what you're saying, so I'm going to stop there. Okay? Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, and have a wonderful Hare Krishna day today.
There are a lot of devotees.
And the chat room appreciate it. Mother Branti.
Yeah. And I'll tell you all, one of the reasons why I tried to give encouraging classes is because I need to be encouraged myself. So, Hari Bol.
Thank you.